new church, indeed, had not been built in that forgotten corner of Finisterre for centuries. Not since the Calvary on its pile of stones had been raised in the tiny square, surrounded then, as now, perhaps, by grey naked cottages. Not since the castle with its round tower down on the river had been erected for the Counts of Croisac. But the stone walls enclosing that ancient cemetery had been kept in good repair, and there were no weeds within nor toppling headstones. It looked cold and grey and desolate, like all the cemeteries of Brittany, but it was made hideous neither by tawdry gewgaws nor the license of time, and sometimes it was close to a picture of beauty. When the village celebrated its yearly Pardon, a great procession came out of the church. Priests in glittering robes, young men in their gala costume of black and silver, holding flashing standards aloft, and many maidens in flapping white headdress and collar, black frocks and aprons, flaunting with ribbons and lace. They marched, chanting, down the road beside the wall of the cemetery, where lay the generations that in their day had held the banners and chanted the service of the Pardon. For the dead were peasants and priests. The Croisacs had their burying place in a hollow of the hills, behind the castle. Old men and women who had wept and died, for the fishermen that had gone to the Grand Pêche and returned no more. And now and again a child slept there. Those who walked past the dead at the Pardon, or after the marriage ceremony, or took part in any one of the minor religious festivals with which the Catholic village enlivens its existence, all, young and old, looked grave and sad. For the women from childhood knew that their lot is to wait and dread and weep, and the men that the ocean is treacherous and cruel, but that bread can be wrung from no other master. Therefore, the living have little sympathy for the dead who have laid down their crushing burden, and the dead under their stones slumber contentedly enough. There is no envy among them, for the young who wander at evening and pledge their troth in the Bois d'Amour, only pity for the groups of women who wash their linen in the creek that flows to the river. They look like pictures in the green quiet book of nature, these women, in their glistening white headgear and deep collars. But the dead know better than to envy them, and the women and the lovers know better than to pity the dead. The dead lay at rest in their boxes and thanked God they were quiet and had found everlasting peace. And one day, even this, for which they had patiently endured life, was taken from them. The village was picturesque, and there was none quite like it, even in Finisterre. Artists discovered it and made it famous. After the artists followed the tourists, and the old creaking diligence became an absurdity. Brittany was the fashion for 3 months of the year, and wherever there is fashion, there is at least one railway. The one built to satisfy the thousands who wish to visit the wild, sad beauties of the west of France was laid along the road beside the little cemetery of this tale. It takes a long while to awaken the dead. These heard neither the voluble working men nor even the first snort of the engine. And of course they neither heard nor knew of the pleadings of the old priest that the line should be laid elsewhere. One night, he came out into the old cemetery and sat on a grave and wept. For he loved his dead and felt it to be a tragic pity that the greed of money and the fever of travel and the petty ambitions of men whose place was in the great cities, where such ambitions were born, should shatter forever the holy calm of those who had suffered so much on earth. He had known many of them in life, for he was very old, and though he believed, like all good Catholics, in heaven and purgatory and hell, yet he always saw his friends as he had buried them, peacefully asleep in their coffins.